Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 111.
The House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The Sergeant-at-Arms will close the doors. We'd ask members and our guests in the gallery to please silence any electronic devices. This afternoon's prayer will be offered by Representative Lambeth. We'd ask our members and our guests in the gallery to please stand for the prayer and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance thereafter. Representative Lambeth.
Thank you, and welcome to another great day here in North Carolina. Our Heavenly Father, today is a day to appreciate each and every moment you have given to us. Today is a moment to give thanks for the blessings we share. Today is another opportunity to give thanks for each member of this body, for their families, and the citizens whom they represent. Today is the time to ask your blessings and watch upon our military, especially those serving during troubled and turbulent areas throughout this world. Today provides us an opportunity to ask for special prayers and your comfort to the many persons who are struggling with sickness or disease, as well as their family members who may be fearful and worried about their special loved one, and who are devastated by the flooding in our state and the ravages of the tornadoes and weather turbulence. We pray for our country, we pray for our leaders, we pray for our healthcare workers, and we pray for our educators as they begin a new school year under the added strain of a pandemic. We know through your blessings and comfort that we will make it through to a better day and a brighter future. Now as we close our prayer, we simply say, thank you for loving each of us. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for August 17th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Hall moves the journal for August 17th be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. The House will come to order. Members, we are now going to seat a new member of the House. The appointment proclamation for Representative A. Reese Pirtle, Jr. was officially read on August 11th. He will now subscribe to the oath of office. He and his family may approach the well of the House. Representative Pirtle, if you'll join me here with your family, and I will hand you the, I believe your wife's going to hold the Bible. Do you, A. Reese Pirtle, Jr., solemnly and sincerely swear that you will support the Constitution of the United States, that you will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the state of North Carolina and to the constitutional powers and authorities which are or may be established for the government thereof, and that you will endeavor to support, maintain, and defend the Constitution of said state, not inconsistent with the Constitution of the United States, to the best of your knowledge and ability, so help you God. And do you further swear that you will well and truly execute the duties of the office of a member of the House of Representatives according to the best of your skill and ability, according to law, so help you God? Congratulations. It's a longer trip than it looks back up here.
That's
Representative Purtle will occupy seat 76, and the Senate will be notified of a special message of his seating as a member of the 2021 House of Representatives. The Speaker also makes the following committee assignments. The clerk will read.
Representative A. Reese Purtle, Jr., Committee of Appointments, Appropriations, Appropriations, Justice and Public Safety, Families, Children and Age Policy, Health, Homeland Security, Military and Veteran Affairs, Judiciary 2, Local Government, Land Use, Planning and Development. Addendum to Committee Assignments. Representative Moss removes Appropriations, Justice and Public Safety.
The gentleman from Rockingham, Representative Purtle, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I realize that I'm here today, it's kind of unplanned, and from the tragedy and unexpected death of Representative Jerry Carter. And my prayers are still with his family. But I think it's important that I thank the leadership and members of the House for all the kind words and welcoming comments that I've received over the last week. So, Mr. Speaker, I say thank you, and thank you to the members of the House.
Thank you. Members, we have a number of special recognitions the chair would like to make. First of all, Representative Purtle is accompanied today by his wife, Valerie, and his daughter, Ansley, who were there on the front. I want to thank you all for being with us again today and welcome you all into this family as well. Also, there's a number of other guests we'd like to recognize. Our special messenger from the Senate, Senator Berger, I think he's still here. He may have left. So, who is the senator from Rockingham County as well, and was kind enough to join us as well. Representative Purtle's brother Sam is with us. Sam, where are you? Up here on the left. I want to thank you for being with us. Also, Justice Phil Berger Jr., who is in the gallery. Justice Berger, we're glad to have you with us today as well. On the floor, of course, today, Treasurer Dale Falwell, who's with us over here as well. Dale, it's good to see you as well. Of course, former Representative Burt Jones of Rockingham County. Burt, want to thank you for being here, and of course, what you also do with Capital Ministries. We appreciate you continuing to stay here and continuing to work as well, so we appreciate that. A number of other special guests who have joined the Purtles with us today, who are also in the gallery, and if your name's called, please stand. Mayor Neville Hall of Eden. Charlie Hall, who's the chair of the Rockingham County Board of County Commissioners. Mark Richardson, who is a member of the County Commissioners of Rockingham County. Ben Curtis, who is the Register of Deeds for Rockingham County. And then, of course, Philip Thomas, who is Chief Counsel for the NC Republican Party. If you would please join me in welcoming collectively all of our special guests with us today. Thank you for being with us. The lady from Cabarrus, Representative Baker, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege. Actually, we'll come back to that later. And I believe Jason Simmons is also with us, who is Executive Director of the NCGOP. Jason, thank you for being with us as well. Please join me in welcoming him with us too. A few other recognitions on motion of the gentleman from Brunswick County, Representative Miller. The chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Luke Dixon, who is a sophomore at NC State. Luke, where are you? Right over here on the right. Thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it. And then on motion of the gentleman from Franklin County, Representative Winslow, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to the parents and students from Lighthouse Christian Homeschool Association, who are accompanied along with board member Wendy Creets, pardon me. Their association supports approximately 300 members. Would y'all stand so we could welcome y'all as well? Thanks for being with us today. Ratification of bills and resolutions, the clerk will read.
The roller clerk reports the following bill duly ratified for presentation to the governor. Senate Bill 35, an act to amend the lawful age of marriage to 16 years of age or older and to provide a maximum 4-year age difference for a 16, 17-year-old to marry. Senate Bill 299, an act to maintain the NCIAC accreditation of the Department of Insurance and making revisions to the laws governing the credit for reassurance and reserve financing.
Chapter bills will be noted. Members of the House have come to order. The chair does intend, pursuant to the notice given earlier, to add some bills to today's calendar that came out of committees already. So with that, Representatives Baker, Lambeth, Potts, Sasser, and White recognize and forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Baker, Lambeth, Potts, Sasser, and White.
Chair Strzok.
Committee report. Senate Bill 191, the no permit left alone. Favor and refer to rules calendar operations of the House.
Chair strikes a referral to rules. Bill be added to today's calendar without objection. So ordered. Court may continue.
Senate Bill 257, Medication Cost Transparency Act. Favor House Committee Substitute. Unfavor Senate Committee Substitute and refer to rules calendar operations of the House.
The Senate Committee Substitute is placed on the unfavorable calendar. The House Committee Substitute. Chair's going to strike referral to rules calendar for today without objection. So ordered. Representatives Humphrey and Setzer, recognize and forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Humphrey and Setzer, Insurance Committee report. Senate Bill 85, allow vision service plan, favorable and refer to health.
Bill is referred to health. Representatives Baker, Lambeth, Potts, Sasser, and White, recognize and forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representatives Baker, Lambeth, Potts, Sasser, and White, health committee report. Senate Bill 693, expedite child safety and permanency, favorable House Committee substitute number 2. Unfavorable House Committee Substitute number 1 and refer to rules, calendar, and operations of the House.
House Committee Substitute number 1 is placed on the unfavorable calendar. House Committee Substitute number 2. Chair's going to strike the referral rules. Add to today's calendar. The objection is ordered. Representative Humphrey and Setzer recognized. Send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Humphrey and Setzer, Insurance Committee report. Senate Bill 228, allow employers to offer EPO benefit plans. Favorable House Committee Substitute, unfavorable Senate Committee Substitute number 2, and we refer to health.
Senate Committee Substitute number 2 is placed on the unfavorable calendar. House Committee Substitute is referred to the Committee on Health. Representative Hall recognized, sent forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Hall, Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House Committee report. Senate Bill 421, in-state tuition and board elections, favorable.
This bill will be calendar 36B. Chair directs me calendar for day without objection. So ordered.
House Bill 353, Winston-Salem, Fort South, and Wake Boards of Education. Favorable committee substitute number 2. Unfavorable committee substitute number 1.
Committee substitute number 1 is placed on the unfavorable counter. Committee substitute number 2, counter 36B, without objection. Today's calendar, so ordered.
Senate Bill 207, various race and age changes. Favorable House Committee substitute number 2. Unfavorable House Committee substitute number 1.
House Committee substitute number 1 is placed on the unfavorable calendar. House Committee substitute number 2, calendar 36B, and added to today's calendar without objection. So ordered. Representatives Eiler, Jones, Shepherd, recognize, send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Eiler, Jones, and Shepherd, Transportation Committee report. Senate Bill 201, East Salvage Express, favorable and referred to rules, calendar operations of the House.
Bills referred to rules.
Senate Bill 379, Insurance and Insurable Certificate of Title, favorable and referred to rules, calendar and operations of the House.
Bills referred to rules. Representative Hall is recognized to send forth a bill for introduction. The clerk will read.
Representative Hall, Rules Calendar Operations of the House Report, DRHR 40657-BN-8, a House resolution electing William P. Bill McBrayer, Jr. and M. E. Barnes, Jr. to serve as members of the State Board of Community College, favorable for introduction.
The clerk will file the bill and assign a bill number. Clerk is authorized to receive conference reports. Clerk will read.
Conference report, Senate Bill 314. The President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives. The conferees appointed to resolve the difference between the Senate and House of Representatives for Senate Bill 314, a bill to be entitled an act to provide additional tools for local government commission and assist local government units to avoid and correct fiscal distress that requires that the impact of changes to sales tax distribution formulas be delayed the fiscal year. The conferees recommend that the Senate and House of Representatives adopt this report. Date conference approved report August 18th to 2021. Conferees of the Senate, Senator McGinnis chair, Senators Newton and Davis. Conferees for the House of Representatives, Representative Moore, chair, Representatives Bell and Hall.
Calendar without objection. Day's calendar. So ordered. Court may continue with the conference reports. Message from the Senate. Court will read.
Special message from the Senate. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that the message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that the Senate adopt the report of the conferees of House Bill 84, Conference Committee Substitute, a bill to be entitled an act to apply premises restrictions for certain sex offenders, to clarify the expunction of misdemeanors, and to amend the law that imposes residential restrictions on sex offenders to provide that the 1,000-foot restriction to be measured at the property line of the property on which the school or child or care center is located. When the appropriate action has been taken by both chambers, the bill will be ordered and rolled. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk.
Noted. Court may continue.
Special message from the Senate. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that the message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that the Senate failed to concur with Senate Bill 105, House Committee Substitute Number 2, 6th Edition, a bill to be entitled an act of making base budget appropriations for current operations, state agencies, Department of Institutions, and other purposes in the request conferees. The President pro tempore appoints Senator Jackson Chair, Senators Harrington, Heiss, Raven, Daniel, Britt, Frawick, Bergen, Perry, Newton, Ballard, DeVere, Lowe, Lee, Sanderson, Edwards, Johnson, McInnes, Sawyer, Alexander, Ford, Steinberg, Clark, and Davis. On the part of the Senate to confer with like committee, appointed by your honorable body, that the end the differences arising may be resolved. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk.
Noted. The lady from Cabarrus, Representative Baker, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege. Would ask the members in that area to please take their seats. The lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, having submitted a representative statement with the clerk, I ask that it be read in its entirety upon adjournment and spread across the journal, and I'd like to be recognized to speak to the statement.
The chair so directs the representative statement to be read upon adjournment for it to be spread upon the journal, and the lady has the floor to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, it is with a heavy but proud heart that I share today with you the story of Concord Police Department's own Officer Jason Schuping. This is a story of accomplishment, service, courage, and integrity. And it's a story of a life cut tragically short. Police Officer Jason Nicholas Schuping was born in Rowan County on November 15, 1995, to Dane and Lynn Schuping. Jason was a standout from a young age, as his drive and determination matched his many talents. Active in church and a Boy Scout in his community, Jason attended East Rowan High School, where he played football and ran track and was a proud member of the Honors Chorus. After graduating from high school in 2014, Jason headed straight to UNC Pembroke, where he ran on the university track team while obtaining a major in criminal justice and a minor in terrorism studies. Balancing that load was no problem for this student athlete who graduated magna cum laude in 2018. Just 1 year later, Jason graduated from the law enforcement training program at Rowan Cabarrus Community College, where I'm sure it won't surprise you, he was the top shooter in his class. Jason then began his career as an officer with the Concord Police Department in 2019. Concord Police Chief Gary Gasick readily recalls his first meeting with Jason in March of 2019. Chief Gasick quickly determined that Jason Schuping wanted to be a police officer for all the right reasons. He impressed the chief with his maturity and with a key characteristic. Jason clearly understood the distinction between the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. And that, as Chief Gasick knew, is critical to sound judgment. Our police department knew that they must hire this officer. He would make Concord better and safer for everyone. And thus began his tenure with the Concord Police Department, during which Officer Schuping was described by his peers as the perfect teammate. You see, Jason wasn't just full of drive. He was full of joy, and he was determined that his peers were going to be happy too. So every partner knew you had better watch out if you weren't in a good mood, because Jason would proceed to annoy you and crack jokes and antics until you finally did crack a smile. And he could also take a joke just as well as he could deliver it. Respected on so many levels, and only 18 months into his career, Jason had received 6 commendation chips, each of which recognizes an individual officer for action above and beyond the call of duty. He was actually given a 7th commendation chip, but it was his feeling that that action and that event was a team event and really did not depend on his individual service. So he returned the chip with a note. "Thank you," it said, "but I didn't earn this. Hold on to it until I have." It's simply who he was. And then came the night of December 16th, 2020, when Officer Shuping, along with another law enforcement agent, responded to a reported car crash and attempted carjacking. Tragically, while approaching the suspect at the scene, Officer Shuping was fatally shot. This perfect teammate, who embodied the core values of his profession with courage, competence, and integrity, died in the line of duty. He died living out his dream of being service to others, of giving his life for someone he did not know. And so today, we remember this heroic officer who truly exemplified the very best of humanity. A man who leaves behind his grieving family and beloved wife, Haley, to whom Chief Gasek presented her husband's Medal of Valor and Purple Heart. The Medal of Valor is the highest commendation that can be given to a Concord police officer. This young and valiant officer gave his life for his community. And in recognition, it is my privilege to announce to you today plans to name the bridge to the Concord Motor Speedway in Cabarrus County in memory of Officer Jason Shuping. This provision is included in the transportation budget and is subject to the governor's approval. Also, in memory of Officer Shuping's service and courage, we have flown flags over the state capitol, and they will be given to the family to preserve. Members, I recall well Chief Gasek's remarks at the December 22, 2020 eulogy, in which he quoted Sir Edmund Burke, warning that the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Let us remember Officer Jason Nicholas Shuping, a good man who demonstrated unwavering courage in the face of danger. And let us, good men and good women, be inspired to match his dedication and sense of duty each and every day that we are called to serve. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Baker. And members, we are honored today, and I'm going to introduce a number of guests who we're honored to have with us today. And I would ask the guests, when I call their name, to please stand. Of course, we have the widow of Officer Shuping with us, Haley Shuping, who's here with us today. And then also the parents, Dane and Lynn Shuping, and then his brother, Paul. And I'm going to pause before I introduce the other guests. And I just want to say, on behalf of all my colleagues, I want you to know that you are in our thoughts and our prayers when this tragic event unfolded. We knew about it, and I can tell you there was a lot of thoughts and prayers and discussion in this body about this senseless tragedy, and I hope you will accept the condolences of this house on the loss of certainly was a wonderful man. Let me go ahead and introduce the other guests before we do the formal recognition. A number of folks with them away as well today. Deputy Chief of Police Jimmy Hughes. Police Chief Gary Gasek. Captain Jeremy Baggerly. Captain Pat Tierney. Captain John Tierney. Lieutenant Lance Brooks. Lieutenant Ramon Gonzalez. Lieutenant Denon Sabanija. Captain Todd McGee. Lieutenant Sidney McGee. Sergeant Kevin Berg. And Police Officer Kyle Baker, who was also involved in the gunfire exchange with the suspect. And then also Officer Caleb Robinson, who was involved in the shootout as well, but who was also shot and wounded himself. I would ask my colleagues to please join me in welcoming these folks with us and thanking them for what they do every day.
Again, we want to thank you for being with us today. You certainly honor us with your presence. Please know that that Officer Shuping will remain in our thoughts and prayers, and certainly this House of Representatives will do all we can to support those of you in law enforcement. Again, thank you for being with us today. Special messages from the Senate and the Corker Reed. House Bill, and on the House Bill 84, actually this was read earlier. Chair is going to direct that this be ordered and rolled and sent to the governor. Representative Hall is recognized, sent forth the committee report, the Corker Reed.
Representative Hall, Rules Calling Offers the House Committee Report. Senate Bill 300, Criminal Justice Reform. Favorable House Committee Substitute Number 2. Unfavorable House Committee Substitute Number 1.
House Committee Substitute Number 1 is placed on the unfavorable counter. House Committee Substitute Number 2, Counter 36B, added day's counter without objection. So ordered. Representative McNeil, recognized, sent forth committee report. Corker Reed.
Representative McNeil, Pensions and Retirement Committee Report. Senate Bill 311, No Waiting Period Under LGERS and LEOs. Favorable House Committee Substitute, unfavorable Senate Committee Substitute, and re-refer to Rules Calendar and Operations of the House.
Senate Committee Substitute is placed on the unfavorable calendar. The House Committee Substitute is referred to Committee on Rules Calendar and Operations of the House. Counter, House Bill 481, the Corker Reed.
Representatives Carson Smith, Faircloth, and Miller, House Bill 481, a bill to be entitled Firearm Disposal, UNC Campus Police, General Assembly of North Carolina, and X.
Gentleman from Pender, Representative Smith is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House do concur with House Bill 481 as amended in the Senate.
The gentleman is moving that the House concur with all three amendments that the Senate made to House Bill 481. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
The motion is properly before the body. The gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House 481 passed out of this body 117-0. It allows that not just some state agencies, but all of them can trade or sell firearms to federal firearms dealers. The Senate put three amendments on. I've had some questions, so I'm going to go very quickly through each one. Amendment 1, Senator Britt amended this bill to make it makes the 20-year waiting period to petition the court to have firearm right restored for an out-of-state conviction just like it's calculated in-state. So if you are a convicted felon in North Carolina, non-violent felon, you can get your firearms rights back. If you petition the court, the way they compute an out-of-state conviction is not like they do in-state. This would just mirror the two. The Second Amendment, Senator Edwards just amended the original bill to codify the Department of Administration rules when it came to the sale or the disposition of firearms. In Amendment 3, Senator Davis sent this amendment in to authorize local law enforcement officers to purchase the department weapons they carry if the agency changes to new weapons. I'd ask for your support and your vote and on all three amendments.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the motion concur with Senate Amendments 1, 2, and 3 to House Bill 481. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Stevens wish to be recorded. Representative Stevens, I saw her on the floor a minute ago. Representative Davis, gentlemen wish to record. Davis. Last call for Representative Stevens. The clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 93, having voted in the affirmative, 8 in the negative. The House does concur with Senate Amendments 1, 2, and 3. Of House Bill 81, bills ordered and rolled, sent to the governor. Senate Bill 191, Corker Reed.
Senators Daniels, Crawford, and Britt. Senate Bill 191, A bill to be entitled No Patient Left Alone Act, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
The gentleman from Duplin, Representative Dixon, is recognized to debate the bill.
Mr. Speaker, I believe there's an amendment that if you would take care, let's handle it first.
We do have an amendment from Representative Sasser. I'm glad to dispose of that first. The gentleman from Stanley, Representative Sasser, is recognized to send forth an amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Sasser moves to amend the bill on page 3, lines 1 through 2, by inserting the following between the lines.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All the amendment does, it's a friendly amendment, is add adult care homes to the bill. Would ask for your support.
Further discussion or debate on the amendment? Not the question before the House, the adoption of Amendment 1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The amendment's adopted. Now the gentleman from Duplin, Representative Dixon, has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. I've been asked to present this Senate bill on the floor, which I will attempt to do. Senate Bill 191 would create mandatory visitation rights for patients in hospitals, nursing homes, combination homes, hospice care facilities, adult care homes, special care units, and residential treatments, and also, as indicated by the previous amendment. Those patients in those facilities would be permitted to receive visitors to the fullest extent permitted by federal law, consistent with the guidelines and regulations of the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare and the Centers for Disease Control Services. If any facility was found in violation of that and fails to cure that violation within 24 hours, the Department of Health and Human Services must assess a $500 civil penalty for each instance on each day a violation is found. We would stand for questions and ask for your positive vote on this bill.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 191 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Ray, okay, gentlemen, is recorded. Clerk Lock Machine record the vote 81, having voted in the affirmative, 21 in the negative. Senate Bill 191 passed the second reading without objection. Be read third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 191 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 191, having passed third reading, will be returned to the Senate unengrossed for concurrence. Senate Bill 257, the clerk will read.
Senators Perry, Britt, and Johnson, Senate Bill 257, a bill to be entitled Medication Cost Transparency Act, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
There is an amendment on this bill. Representative Sasser, would the gentleman like to do the amendment first?
Yes, sir.
The gentleman's recognized to send forth the amendment. Clerk will read.
Representative Sasser moves to amend the bill on page 1, lines 16 to 19, by rewriting the lines to read.
The gentleman from Stanley, Representative Sasser, has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment came out of the Health Committee discussions this morning to add hospitals to the 340B provision in this bill, so would ask for your support.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? If not, the question for the House, the adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The amendment's adopted. We're now on the bill. Representative Sasser, who's carrying this bill? Representative Sasser, are you the sponsor of this one?
Yes, sir.
The gentleman's recognized to debate the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 257 unanimously passed the Senate The PCS included in this bill, and plus the amendment, is similar language that the House passed that came out of Senate Bill 432 from last session that passed the House 94-9. I would appreciate your support, and at this time stand for any questions.
For the purpose of the lady from Wake, Representative Adcock, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To debate the bill.
The lady has the floor. I would ask the member to please clear the between the speaker, though. The lady has the floor.
Thank you. You know, this bill has a lot of really good things in it, and it's got a few things that are confusing and a little problematic. And my understanding is this bill will likely go to conference and have those things worked out. I think on balance, it's a good bill. It adds, for the first time, oversight of PBMs by the Department of Insurance. This is going to be a very good thing, I think. I think the other things, I'm optimistic they can be worked out in conference. I plan to vote yes. I would encourage other members to do so as well. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of Senate Bill 257 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Yarbrough on the floor. Clerk will act machine record the vote. 100 having voted in the affirmative, 1 in the negative. Senate Bill 257 passed the second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
Representative North Carolina.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Scotland, Representative Pierce, rise.
Mr. Speaker, need to change your vote on 191 to yes, please.
Gentleman be recorded as having voted aye on Senate Bill 191. Representative Jones, does the gentleman intend to vote no on that last bill? There's only no vote. If that's fine if you are. I just want to ask.
I just had a question, actually, in my contention. Did this go through the regular committee process?
The chair believes it went through the regular committee process.
Well, that was just this morning, right?
I'm not sure when it was.
Could someone speak to that for me, please?
Hold on a minute. Let me come back to it. Well, it is on for third reading, so the gentleman's going to recommend. Would you like to direct that inquiry to the bill sponsor?
Yes.
Bill sponsor yield?
Certainly.
He yields.
I just want to know when did the bill first come to the committee?
Okay. The bill came to, from the Senate, passed first, then it came to insurance, then it came from insurance to health, and it's on the floor today.
So it went to insurance in the House and to health?
Yes, came to insurance from the Senate, then it went to health, and on the floor today.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Gentlemen, all right, the gentleman will be recorded as having voted aye on second reading. Any further discussion, debate on the third reading? If not, the question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 257 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 257 having passed third reading is ordered engrossed, sent to the Senate. For what purpose, the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quickrise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To be recorded as having voted aye on 191.
The gentleman will be recorded as having voted aye on Senate Bill 191. For what purpose, the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Smith, rise.
Aye, 191.
The gentleman will be recorded as having voted aye on Senate Bill 191. Senate Bill 693, the clerk will read.
Senators Jarvis, Clark, and Edwards, Senate Bill 693, a bill to be entitled Expedited Child Safety and Permanency, General Assembly of North Carolina Annexed.
Representative John, will you rise to a vote change? Gentleman may state his request.
Be recorded as voting aye on Senate Bill 191.
The gentleman will be recorded as having voted aye on Senate Bill 191. Representative Stevens, does the lady wish to handle the amendments first or debate the bill?
It may be a little easier to debate the bill first.
Lady has the floor to debate the bill, and then once the lady wishes to send forth amendments, the chair will say recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the House, this does several things that we've tackled on different kinds. This is more of our child safety and child permanence. We have further defined juvenile and clarified those definitions. We worked in conjunction with the department on this and seemed to have everyone's buy-in. There is a second section that has to do with access to confidential information. We, as the policymakers and the providers of funds, are going to be allowed to access some information as is necessary, the minimal amount necessary to when there's a problem back home. We can also call a member of the Department of Social Services to provide that information in a closed committee meeting. We then have permanency and planning hearings. We made some adjustments and changes to that. We have a provision in here that the court shall not waive or refuse to conduct a hearing if a party files a motion seeking to do that. We have a provision in here where we're going to do a statewide CPS hotline, so we get some consistency in child protective service complaints when they come in. We are working on trying to develop a plan to increase appropriate treatment and where we can find the residential settings and not leave children stuck into an ER under an emergency placement or an emergency mental health need. We also, the last section is to require public schools to provide students with information on child abuse and neglect, including sexual abuse. And Mr. Speaker, I'll be happy to send forth the amendments at this time.
Representative Stevens recognized to send forth Amendment ABP-27, Version 1. The clerk will read.
Representative Stevens moves to amend the bill on page 6, line 1 through 2, by rewriting the line to read.
Ladies and gentlemen, Representative Stevens recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you. And what this amendment does is, when I talked about waiving or not, the court not being able to waive or refuse to conduct a hearing if a party files a motion seeking review, we didn't want that to be used as a delay tactic. So what we have done is said that motion must allege a significant fact so that we get these children to permanent placement without disrupting the parents too much, but not allowing them to use this as a delay tactic. You couldn't file a motion this week and file one next week and file one next week unless you've got some significant fact that makes a difference here. I'd ask for your support on the amendment.
Well, purpose of the gentleman from Wake, Representative John Arise.
See if Representative Stevens will respond to a question.
Does the lady yield to a question?
Yes, sir. Is it on the amendment?
She yields.
It is on the amendment. Is significant fact anywhere defined, Representative Stevens?
Lady may answer.
Thank you. I was told by staff that that's the word that's frequently used throughout the juvenile code, is the findings of fact that the judge makes, and this just needs to be significant, not trivial.
Thank you, ma'am.
Further discussion or debate on the amendment? If not, the question for the House is the passage of the amendment. All those in favor will say aye. All those opposed, no. Ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. Representative Stevens recognizes to send forth Amendment ABP-28, Version 1. The clerk will read.
Representative Stevens moves to amend the bill on page 2, line 49, to page 3, line 3, by writing the lines to read.
Lady from Surrey, Representative Stevens recognizes to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is part of where we were trying to sort of tighten down the language a little bit about being able to request information from the Department of Social Services. You will not be given a copy of the record. The record will not be delivered to the General Assembly. It will not, you are not allowed to retain it in your office, and you're not allowed to have a copy of it. You're allowed to review it, and the Department of Social Services only has to provide a minimal amount of information that's necessary. If a committee wishes to bring a director in to ask about a specific problem or concern, that would be a closed hearing meeting, and they would also not retain the records. There is a penalty for doing so. So we're hoping this clarification helps get us down a little tighter. If you were in health, this is a discussion we talked about. This amendment would make things a little better.
Further discussion or debate? If not, the question for what purpose the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Carney, arise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Does the lady yield to a question?
About the amendment.
I do.
She yields.
Could you please define minimal amount of information we're allowed to review?
Lady may answer.
Thank you. The only sufficient information that's necessary to understand what might impact us. We will not be providing any HIPAA information. We will be providing, for example, where was the downfall in the, and I give you specific instances of things that happened. Where was the downfall? Why was this decision made in this way? For example, allowing a 9-year-old child whose mother was arrested on drug abuse charges to remain in a hotel room where there's lots of drug paraphernalia with a man she doesn't know. Where did those things fall through? how come that was a problem. Allowing a child to go from one county to be in a familial placement with somebody that had a history of sexual abuse. Why was that decision made? How do we prevent that kind of thing from happening in the future?
Further discussion or debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of Amendment A2. All those in favor will say aye. All those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Further discussion or debate on the bill? For what purpose does the gentleman from New Hanover, Representative Davis, arise?
Speak on the bill. The
gentleman's recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, Section 6A through 6I of Part 6 of this PCS, which is on page 10 and 12, contains the same language of a bill that I introduced in the House, House Bill 205, which passed unanimously. And there's been a few things added to it that I agree to, so I ask you to please support the bill.
Further discussion or debate? For what purpose does the lady from Buncombe, Representative Fisher, arise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question, please.
Does the lady yield to a question?
Actually, amendment sponsor. Thank you.
Okay, well, we're on the bill.
On the bill at this point. Does the lady yield to a question?
I do.
She yields.
I noted that you described an incident that happened within my Buncombe County HHS, and I have had a number of concerns raised about making sure that information about a young person does not get into the wrong hands. Can you tell me again how you think the amendment that passed and the section of the bill, which I think is the section 1C, protects a child from having HIPAA-related information from going out into the hands of folks who are not qualified, medical personnel or HHS personnel or whomever. I have some real concerns about information getting into the wrong hands. And I listened to the Health Committee today, and I noted that there were several members in there who raised similar concerns. You know, there was talk about how this place can turn into a gossip, a cauldron of gossip, or I'm not quoting him exactly, but it is possible that things can get distorted if information is given to the wrong people. I just want to know that this amendment and the bill itself is not going to result in that information getting into the wrong hands. And just so you know, my Buncombe DSS fully supports the rest of the bill, but they are being very cautious about how information gathered is treated by the General Assembly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lady may answer.
And thank you for the question. One thing is the State Department of DSS will coordinate with the County Social Services to determine how much information, in fact, should be released, how much is minimal, what is sufficient to answer those questions. Second thing, we did talk about information that comes here, that you receive, that winds up laying in your office, that prying eyes can see. So that's what the amendment does. It says if you, individual member, want information, you go to your county DSS. You review the records there. You never have them in your possession. You don't record them. You don't copy them. You don't get to keep copies. Nothing leaves there with you except what's in your head. Then if it's disclosed, we know who disclosed it, and that is a punishable as a misdemeanor. The second part is, if it's severe enough that a committee wants to have the information is bought there, it is done in closed session, no information can be retained. It can be received and listened and looked at, but nothing is retained. So that's the fail-safe we tried to build into the program.
Thank you.
For what purpose the gentleman from Wake? Representative Jones, rise.
To ask the sponsor a question, please.
That Representative Stevens, lady yield.
I yield, and I will tell you, this is not my dog. I'm just walking it.
But she yields. This is one of those bills where all the lawyers are going to start speaking, I guess. Go ahead. And judges, too.
Well, Representative Stevens, I was curious to know what on earth would a legislator, I should say, why on earth would a legislator want to look at the confidential records of some youngster in any particular case? What would be the purpose?
Thank you for the question. And I've been dealing with this for 6 years now, trying to find out where the weaknesses are in the system to try to get to some consistency. One county may do it this way, another county does it that way. This county that decides to place a child in another county with that county saying we don't want to watch it. We don't want to follow this case because it's not an appropriate placement. What do you do with that? And we are the policymakers that eventually have to bite the bullet and make that decision. So that's it. But it's not all the confidential information. It's not everything. It's not throwing open the records. It's not looking at the medical issues. It's what did the Department of Social Services do in a particular case that we need to somehow correct or fix in the future. We need to see these cases before they hit the media so that we can start dealing with those on a one-on-one basis.
Would the gentlelady take one more question from me, please?
Cheers.
I guess what worries me is this. I would think that any issue that arose out of any given case, if it rolls one time for case A, another time for case B, another for case C, then perhaps the legislator would have some interest in solving that particular issue. But the identity of those ABC people wouldn't be that vital. And so, ergo, he could solve the same problem by lifting out the problem without knowing the identity of the individual. And that's just my concern. It gives me a little heartburn for folk from up here to be looking in people's confidential records. It's just a little bit too hands-on for my taste. But just, do you have similar concern?
Thank you. Yes, I have some similar concerns. That's why it's in here as minimal information. We don't have to know the specifics of this child's medical record. We probably don't even need to know this child's name. We get a report that says a 9-year-old did so and such or was left so and such. We get a report that says an 8-year-old was chained to the front of a fence and left with a collar on. We need to know what was social services' response, how was it appropriate or inappropriate in the way they dealt with it. Do we need to create new policy decisions? I keep seeing interference between you and I. That's why I was pausing. No, someone was standing between us. That's okay. I'll give you one more example of where we had a policy change. Department of Social Services decided to do safety placement agreements. Okay, you've got a problem, but you haven't gotten court intervention now, so we're voluntarily going to place the child somewhere else. Well, guess what? They didn't have the authority to do that, and they eventually got sued because the children were being left out of the home too long. So their decision was to simply take it on into court without coming to us saying, you know, we need to make a change. We needed to make the voluntary placement agreements first. They didn't ask us. We then needed to help them resolve the problem they created, but we couldn't do that until we got into some specific information. This is sort of in an effort to say there might be a trouble situation, but we want to get ahead of that trouble situation for then and for in the future.
What purpose slave from Durham? Representative Morey, rise.
Thank you. Dash the bill sponsor question.
Representative Stevens, lady yield.
I yield.
She yields.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Stevens. And just listening to your last answer, minimal information, you said they may not even be required to give over the juvenile's name. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Would that be a protective, minimal? Now I'm even more confused. If I want to know about a case that I think was really botched in Durham, and I say, you know, this happened on this date, I want minimal information you can give me so I can know as a legislator if procedures were followed, if there were mistakes made, and I want to know the name, I want to know the parent's name, I want to know the address, I want to know the investigators, the social worker. Is that minimal information?
We're having somebody between us. I'm just trying to...
Representative Ager never comes between us.
Right. Representative Ager, I think they were telling you you're breaking that rule of stepping in front of Representative Morey, but I wasn't going to call you out because you were getting pretty well.
what I would say to you is that's for the Department of Health and Human Services to coordinate with the local social services to find out how much information. They're entitled to see all the information, how much is necessary for us to review that situation. That's why they're also included in this, and we have run a lot of these provisions through them.
Follow-up question?
Lady O'Shields.
Thank you. So DHHS would be the ultimate traffic light. Too much information going to a member of the General Assembly or not enough? And then if I'm not satisfied with the information I'm getting, do I appeal to DHHS or they're not following the law?
I think at that point you go to the oversight committee for that agency and ask them to determine, to bring them, because that's the point at which you bring the director here. You bring the director here, and you can start with that process, or you can start with the personal process of you go out and talk with them. If that doesn't work, then you can come back and bring in the bring it before the subcommittee in closed session.
Thank you. Speak on the bill.
Lady has floor. Debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I think overall this is a good bill. It's very good with placement, very good with keeping kids together. But this one section, which allows any one of us, what I think is really interfering with DSS, DHHS, is troublesome. We all may have good intents, but when a friend or someone is involved in a case and they say, oh, representative, I know you can find out more about this case than they're letting me know about, I think it is a real problem. So with this provision in the bill, I think it is a poison pill. I think it really interferes with our department, with our social workers, and with the confidentiality for these juveniles. So I'd encourage you to vote no. Hopefully we'll get the good portions of this bill back into another bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate. For what purpose, gentlemen from Wake? Representative Jones, rise.
Speak to the bill.
Gentleman has floor.
This section bothers me a lot, too. When I was a judge for 17 years, we would occasionally look at documents and so forth. I know the lawyers in here are familiar with this, in camera. And what that meant was the lawyers would come back in the chambers and they'd bring us something, we'd look at it, and it was all between us and there. Always brought the court reporter. And even that kind of bothered me. But I think that when you start getting into this kind of record from here, from over here, these are lawmakers over here. It's not even a court. It's not a good precedent. And for that reason, I really, that one thing in this bill is a good bill, but I can't support that because I think it just opens the door that what else confidentially we want to look at around the state. I mean, it's kind of once you start down that alley, and I don't think it's necessary. I think that's why we entrust people in the Department of Social Services and other people with that kind of thing, and that's why we have courts. At least perhaps you go through a court, maybe, but just the way it's written is troublesome. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question before the House is the passage of Senate Bill 693 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Winslow, aye. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 71 having voted in the affirmative, 31 in the negative. Senate Bill 693 passes second reading. Objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina next.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Wake? Representative Jones, rise.
I just want to change my vote on 191 to yes. And
gentlemen, of course, having voted aye on Senate Bill 191. All right, let's go ahead and dispose of this bill on third reading. Question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 693 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. As appear to have it, as do have it, Senate Bill 693, ordered engrossed and sent to the Senate. Introduction of bills and resolutions, Clerk will read.
Rules governing operations of the House, House Resolution 972, The House resolution elected William P. Bill McBrayer, Jr. and M. E. Barnes, Jr. to serve as members of the State Board of Community Colleges.
Counter. Without objection, day's counter. So ordered. For what purpose, the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Ajeed Rice?
To change my vote, sir, Senate Bill 191.
Senate Bill 191. The gentleman wishes to be recorded as aye.
Yes, sir.
Gentlemen, of course, haven't voted aye on Senate Bill 191. Representative Jones, your light still on. Gentlemen, need to be recognized again? Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir. All right. Senate Bill 421. The clerk will read.
Senators Craven, Woodard, and Barnes. Senate Bill 421. A bill to be entitled an act authorized community college to determine eligibility for in-state tuition for recent high school graduates meeting certain criteria and to clarify the State Board of Community College election process. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Lady from Randolph, Representative Hurley is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill does exactly what he just read. I'd appreciate your yes vote. Thank you.
Question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 421 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Shepherd, the gentleman intend to vote no? Okay. Representative Winslow, wish to vote? Clerk Lock Machine record the vote. 100 haven't voted in the affirmative, none of the negative. Senate Bill 421 passed the second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 421 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 421 having passed third reading will be returned to the Senate. House Bill 353, the clerk will read.
Representative Lambert and Zachary, House Bill 353, a bill to be entitled Winston-Salem, Forsyth, and Wake Boards of Education, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Forsyth, Representative Lambert, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a local bill for Forsyth County and Wake County. There are 115 school boards in North Carolina. 112 of them have staggered terms. There are three school boards that do not have staggered terms, Person, Wake, and Forsyth County. What this bill does is it moves Wake and Forsyth County to a staggered term system of elections. It starts with the next election. Top vote getters would get longer terms, lower vote getters would get shorter terms, and then from their point, that point forward, they would be on a normal schedule every 4 years. I recommend it for your approval.
Further discussion or debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of House Bill 353 on second reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 353 having passed second reading without
objection.
Having been objected to remains on the counter. Could the lady approach just a moment? Okay. I think Representative Harrison will withdraw the objection. I believe there's an amendment that one of the members wants to run, so the chair can displace it. Any other members have objection? Third reading? Hearing no objection will be read a third time. And the chair will displace the bill at this moment so that an amendment can be run. For what purpose, the lady from Wilson, Representative Cooper Suggs, rise.
To have my vote recorded as a yes on SB 191.
May be recorded as having voted aye on Senate Bill 191. Representative Dixon, the chair can't help but notice that all the change votes happen on a bill the gentleman was running. I'm assuming the gentleman has no objection today to that.
You're correct. People from Duplin are pretty smart.
There you go. For what purpose, the gentleman from Northampton, Representative Ray, rise.
change my vote on Senate Bill 693 from a no to a yes.
On yeah, okay, so the gentleman will be recorded as having voted aye on Senate Bill 693. Representative Yarbrough, is this on that motion the gentleman would like to make?
Yes.
The gentleman's recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, having voted on the prevailing side, I move to reconsider the vote by which the House failed to concur with Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 366.
The gentleman has moved that the House do reconsider the vote by which House Bill 366, the non-concurrence vote, and the gentleman has the floor to debate the motion to reconsider.
The conference committee met and the Senate prevailed. And so nothing in the bill has changed, and so now I'm moving to concur.
Okay. Well, let's do the reconsideration first. Do any members wish to debate the actual motion to reconsider? Seeing none, those in favor of the motion to reconsider will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Richardson on the floor. Representative Butler wish to vote. Hunt, Robertson, Brown. Representative Richardson off the floor. Clerk Watt machine record the vote. 90 having voted in the affirmative, 11 to the negative. The motion to reconsider has been adopted. The bill is now back before the body. The gentleman from Person, Representative Yarbrough, is recognized for a motion.
I move that we concur with the Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 366.
Okay, first of all, the chair is also going to dismiss the conferees that were initially appointed. The Senate will also be notified that the House has withdrawn the non-concurrence and that the conferees have been dismissed. The gentleman from Person is recognized to debate the motion to concur.
We looked at this bill. The Senate did add a couple small provisions. We met in conference and agreed that they are good provisions, and the bill is ready to go forward. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, rise?
Ask the member a question, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Yarbrough, does the gentleman yield?
Yes.
He yields.
Can you give us just a smidgen more about what that one's about?
Okay. As a part of this regulatory reform bill, we had a company that was complaining about the regulatory process and tried to put a provision in the bill that would allow them to bypass the regulatory process. We then looked at the regulatory process for septic systems, did not reach an agreement on that within the House, and so that provision was not included. The Senate came back and added a provision that tightened up the language about what septic systems are actually allowed to be used within the state and what would be necessary to get your septic system approved.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All systems go.
All right. For what purpose does the lady from New Hanover, Representative Butler, rise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Yarbrough, gentlemen, yield.
Yes.
He yields.
Well, is this the bill? I was just trying to hurriedly catch up. Is this the bill that had the remote inspection provision in it?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
For what purpose, gentleman from Pitt, Representative Farkas, rise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Yarbrough, gentleman, yield?
Yes.
He yields.
Thank you, Representative. Following up on Representative Butler's question, could you give some more detail about this remote inspections, please?
Actually, I would prefer to refer that question to Representative Brody, who is the expert in this area.
Representative Farkas, would the gentleman like Representative Brody to yield that question? Representative Brody, the gentleman is recognized to respond to that question. The gentleman needed a question responded, did you hear?
No, I heard it.
Gentleman has four.
Thank you very much. Folks, a couple of years ago, we put in a provision for a different inspection category. It was called a change-out inspector. Change-out inspector is somebody that will go, or change-out is, let's say, your HVAC or heat goes out, and it's usually heat goes out in the coldest day and HVAC goes out in the warmest day. And you have to send somebody, a technician or an HVAC person out to fix it. Now, the problem we run into is that generally, first of all, a lot of that is done at night, so you can't get an inspector there. So what they do is they make provisions for the inspector to, well, for the HVAC person to come back to the house during the day while the inspectors are in working, and then the inspector can, technician can call the inspector, and then they can go in and the inspector can direct that person to video where the certain spots of the, of, you know, code compliance, et cetera, and then they can do that. The other thing is let's say your AC goes out during the day and you have to get somebody there. It generally takes a day to get the inspector. You have to schedule a day after. So they can actually make arrangements with the inspection department to also do the same thing. Call in an inspector so the inspector, during their regular route, can actually view the code compliance on those things. And that's basically what they started to do, is basically around these change-out inspectors, HVA people who do change-out of heating and cooling systems.
For what purpose does the lay from wait, Representative Dahl, Representative Farkas, the gentleman have an additional question?
It wasn't a question I was going to speak to.
The gentleman's recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you. I appreciate Representative Brody's clarification on that. My interpretation, though, when I look at this language, is a little bit more concerning. When I initially saw the virtual inspections, my hope was that maybe it was narrowly tailored to be able to account for the fact that we're in COVID, and if someone needed to virtually get to something and we were trying to keep our distances. That made some sense to me. The second part that maybe gave me some made me open to it was the idea that maybe that these inspections were part of a follow-up where a building inspector had already gone through the first time. But the way that I see the text as written makes it seem to me that someone could, a general contractor, anybody, could just be there the very first time it's time for an inspection and have a lot more control on what a building inspector does or does not see. That's a big, big flag for me, and I was kind of hoping in the conference report that that would be something that we would have addressed, because I thought that's a concern. I'd love to see a much more narrowly tailored focus. Again, I'm open to something on a second visit, just to kind of tie up some odds and ends that perhaps the building inspector identified and could have been fixed. But I think we really kind of go into a slippery slope here, and I think we undermine our building inspectors and the good work that they do with this legislation in its current form, which is why I will be voting to not concur with this. Thank you.
For what purpose, gentlemen, for union, Representative Brody, rise.
To speak on the bill, please.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you once again. I know we have a lot of conversations because we're in this business together here. But the inspection department has control over this. If you think that the contractor can control an inspector, you got to go out there and see that that does not happen. They're very adamant about protecting their area, and so this has been pretty much hashed through Department of Insurance, and we have agreed that number one, the inspection department has control, and number two, it's a tool that they can use along with their other inspections to accomplish sometimes inspections that need to be done now, but they can't get an inspector physically there now, so they can do it remotely. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the motion to concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 366. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Zachary, wish to vote. Clerk will lock machine, record the vote. 65, having voted in the affirmative, 36 in the negative. The House does concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 366. The bill is ordered and enrolled and sent to the governor. Senate Bill 207, the clerk will read.
Senators Britt Daniels and Muhammad Senate Bill 207, a bill to be entitled Various Raise Age Changes, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
The gentleman from New Hanover, Representative Davis, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, Senate Bill 207, the PCS that was heard earlier in the Rules Committee today, modifies certain provisions of the Juvenile Justice Reinvestment Act as recommended by the Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee. It modifies the minimum age of a delinquent juvenile and an undisciplined juvenile, and it modifies the law dealing with juvenile court mental health assessments. I would say that that portion with the mental health assessments is identical language to a bill I previously introduced that passed the House unanimously, House Bill 615, Juvenile Court Mental Health Assessments. If I could give you a little history, the bill came over from the Senate. It came to be heard in the House Judiciary 1 Committee, and there was a PCS. In preparation of that PCS, I worked with Representative Marsha Morey and a lot of the other stakeholders who had been working on this previously, including members of the Juvenile Justice Reinvestment Advisory Committee. That bill or PCS passed out of the House Judiciary 1 unanimously. It then went to the Rules Committee. Today, when it was heard in the Rules Committee, that PCS was not what was presented to the Rules Committee. Rather, a new PCS was introduced, which had everything in it that the original PCS that passed out of the Judiciary 1 Committee unanimously had, with the exception of Part 5, which was recommended by the Association of District Attorneys. That did receive a favorable report from the Rules Committee. And, Mr. Speaker, with your permission, I'd ask for Representative Stevens to explain what the changes were in Part 5, which, once again, were the only changes from what came out of the Judiciary 1 Committee. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, sir. The lady from Surrey, Representative Stevens, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and members of the House. What this bill does is said that 8- and 9-year-olds who commit a certain level of offense need more than 6 to 9 months of counseling. And that's something we've been looking at. There's issues raised about competency for juveniles. And when an adult commits a crime, we don't just forgive it. We don't just say walk away. We don't know what we're going to do with juveniles who supposedly don't have the competency. The offenses that we have for 8- and 9-year-olds are A through F felonies, A through G felonies. Now, you keep thinking, what could a juvenile do that would be that bad? These are juveniles, and I'm reading from some of the statistics of the things that juveniles did. We have the information without having the names of the individual. We have first-degree arson. We have first-degree kidnapping. We have indecent liberties between the children engaging in sexual acts. We have robbery with a dangerous weapon by an 8- and 9-year-old. We have a second-degree arson. We have a second-degree forcible rape, which is engaging with vaginal intercourse with another person by force and against their will. We had several of those by 9-year-olds. We have at least 9 offenses of second-degree forcible sexual offense, which is engaging with some sex act with another person against their will. We have another sexual offense, which is with a person knowing that that person is mentally incapacitated and unable to engage. These are 8- and 9-year-olds, and we believe 9 months of counseling will fix this problem. We can keep jurisdiction over them longer in juvenile court than this. We also had one, believe it or not, trafficking in opium and heroin. A 9-year-old trafficking in opium and heroin. We need more than 6 to 9 months counseling for these children. We need to get them help. And until we can otherwise change the system, we need to ensure that they're going to stay under our court's jurisdiction.
For what purpose, the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise?
To put forth an amendment, if this is the proper time.
It is. The lady's recognized to send forth an amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Moore moves to amend the bill on page 6, lines 27 through 33, by deleting those lines.
The lady has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd really like to thank Representative Davis, who did a yeoman's job in carrying this bill. This has not been easy. And a couple of years ago, we introduced a similar bill and went to a study. Should North Carolina raise the minimum age of jurisdiction from 6, we're the only state in the country, 6-year-olds can be under juvenile delinquency court jurisdiction. So for 2 years, the JJAC, Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee, appointed by members the Speaker has appointed and the Senate pro tem, consisting of law enforcement, juvenile advocates, court counselors, district attorneys, defense attorneys, have met and discussed this. Hours. I've been on some of their calls. Hours of talking about this. Their recommendation is not what we have in this bill right here today that was amended last night at 6:30. Their recommendation is a clean statement. Juvenile jurisdiction should start at the age of 10 in North Carolina. There are no exclusions. And I know Representative Stevens just went through a plethora of horribles, of bills, of kidnapping, of trafficking in opium committed by 8 or 9 year olds. Well, guess what? Probably most of those cases had an adult or an older juvenile co-defendant. What we are saying that is endorsed by ALEC, is endorsed by the ACLU, Children with Disability Rights, NC Child, 17 organizations endorse this. Raise the age, do not exclude based on offense. Because what we are saying, and what even our North Carolina law says about capacity, our statutes say no person may be tried, convicted, sentenced, punished for a crime when by reason of mental illness or defect that he is unable to understand the nature and object of the proceedings against him, to comprehend his own situation in reference to the proceedings, or to assist in his defense in a rational, reasonable manner. 8 and 9 year olds, third graders, fourth graders, cannot assist in their defense with an attorney. They are impulsive. Their intellect is not fully informed. As a judge sitting in juvenile court watching 8 and 9 year olds look around the room, have no idea the role of a defense attorney, prosecutor, or judge. And to watch them on occasion go through a plea transcript of 2 pages, having to say yes or no, they have no idea what these words mean. Adjudication, plea negotiation, disposition, adjudication. Most states that have a statutory minimum age in the United States, it is age 10. 3 of our states, it is age 12. We are doing the right thing by taking 6 and 7 year olds out. I am asking in this amendment, make it 8 and 9 as well. And I will also say, if you think an 8 or a 9 year old who is charged or may commit second degree murder or a kidnapping, that we can really do a lot with that child under our current law, you can't even send them to a youth development center until they're age 10. You put them on probation. So I ask you to support this amendment. Let's have North Carolina in the mainstream of the country, recognizing what child psychiatrists say, what mental health experts say. Do the right thing. We will get these kids consultations. We will get them to mental health. We will get them to social services. We will support them and their families. But do not start them off with a delinquency history at the age 8 and 9 because of an A through G felony. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from New Hanover, Representative Davis, rise?
Speak on the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I'm really between a rock and a hard place on this. As was stated earlier, I worked really hard on the PCS that when was heard in the Judiciary 1, and it was based upon what the Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee recommended. When it came to the Rules Committee today and the changes were made that Representative Stevens has talked about, I was informed that this was something that had been agreed upon between the Association of District Attorneys and some of the stakeholders from the Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee in order to get the district attorneys on board with the bill and move it forward. I wish this had all had been handled when it was before the Judiciary 1 Committee so we could have gotten it all straightened out then, but unfortunately it wasn't. So I'm in a position of kind of like when 50% of my friends for it, 50% of friends against it, and I always agree with my friends. So I think what you just need to do is listen to the arguments been made and vote your conscience. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, rise?
To debate the Maury Amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen of the House. You've heard a good emotional plea today about 6, 7, 8, and 9-year-olds, and we've all got them, you know, children, cousins, nephews, whatever. But don't let that tug at your heartstrings. And if you want your heartstrings tugged, think about the victims of these crimes also and how their lives are affected by this. Representative Stevens did a great job, and I won't, you know, belabor that a lot, but a lot of serious crimes. Now, as far as the Juvenile Justice Advisory Commission, yes, they make proposals, but it is our duty to make policy, not theirs. Now, I'm not against the Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee. As a matter of fact, the first four parts of this bill, if you look at House Bill 252 that I sponsored and several other people in this sponsored, that is exactly the same bill as the first four parts of this bill that I sponsored and ran for the Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee and Billy Laster, the Director of Juvenile Justice. So I'm not against the Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee. They got 100%. If you go through the first four parts, they get 100% of what they asked for. And if you go through part five, they got about 95% of what they asked for. So the changes were very, very minimal. It was said in the Rules Committee that over a three-year period, there were around 1,100 six- through nine-year-olds that engaged in criminal activity. Now, not all of that criminal activity was of the felony level that Representative Stevens talked about. And I could go on, and I went down and break it down. There was about 150 of those that were the level of what we're talking about. The bill as written, without the Maury Amendment, would remove all of those 1,100 from the court system with the exception of five juveniles. And that would be for the most serious of crimes. Representative Maury said that North Carolina is one of the states where six-year-olds, one of the few states where six-year-olds start still charged with a crime. Well, even without her amendment, if you leave the bill as it is right now and you vote for it, six-year-olds would not be charged with a crime, any crime, in the future. Neither would seven-year-olds if you don't vote for the Maury Amendment. All H felonies, all I felonies, all misdemeanors for 8 and 9-year-olds, off the table. Can't charge an 8 and a 9-year-old with them. Only the most serious A through G felonies, your sexual assaults, your rapes, your armed robberies, your arsons, that's the only thing that's left on the table. And you know what? The juvenile justice people are still left with the ability to divert those cases, and the judges in those cases still have the ability to find the child incompetent to stand trial. So what you're looking at is a firewall. You know, if you pass the Maury Amendment, then no 6, 7, 8, or 9-year-old will be able to be charged with any crime in the state of North Carolina ever again, period. No crime. 9-year-old murders his parents. He gets 6 months of counseling. And if that don't work, he gets an additional 3 months. So I think what the JJAC committee and others want to do is a bridge way too far. You're eliminating 6, 7, 8 year olds, you're eliminating 95% of the crimes that they commit from adjudication and only leaving the most serious ones. So I beg you, don't do this. Vote against the Maury Amendment. It is a bridge too far. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quick, rise?
To debate the amendment. The
gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Allow me to recast the image of 9-year-olds as we're here debating. They are kicking, they are running, they are throwing, they are playing ball. It is easy to, as previous representative said, to become emotional about that, but that emotion runs both ways. We do make policy. It is our responsibility to make policy, but we don't make policy in a vacuum. In fact, it was the legislative body that put together the JJAC committee, and the JJAC committee came back with this recommendation that was previously approved unanimously that we did not include 8 and 9 year olds in this legislation. It's a good bill. 6 and 7 year olds are taken out. It's good. There are parts of it that are good regardless of the outcome of our vote. But I want us to really consider approving this amendment, which is what the JJAC committee recommended to us, a committee that we put together, not a committee that just came out of the blue. We put this committee together. They studied it. They came up with the recommendation, and the bill that included 8 and 9 year olds in the exemption was one that was previously approved by this body. These 9-year-old boogeymen that we're talking about, nobody wants any of our children. And certainly the victims of these crimes, nobody's saying children should be allowed to get away with crime, but recast the image of the 8 and 9 year olds that we're talking about. They are running, they are kicking, they are throwing. And if we're saying, I heard one of the previous representatives say that we don't let adults get away with these things. If we don't think there's a difference between an adult and a child, God help us all.
For what purpose does the lady from Surrey, Representative Stevens, rise?
To speak a second time.
The lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I just wanted to point out a few things. I really appreciate Representative McNeil's comments. But I wanted to clarify a couple of things. We did not spring this out last night. We've been talking about this for weeks. We've been working with the Conference of DAs. We've been working with the Juvenile Justice Group. And we had a partial agreement in the last couple of weeks. There were a couple of things we wanted that were even further than this. But we went to the part that we all agreed upon, which was to keep 8 and 9 year olds in this situation for A through D felonies. This week is when we reached that final agreement. I happened to be in that Judiciary Committee meeting, and I didn't vote, but I don't think there were any Republicans in there but the chair and the co-chair. 8 and 9 year olds out playing, kicking a ball, having a normal good childhood are not committing sexual offenses, rapes, selling drugs, those kinds of things. And if there's an adult that's engaging in that activity with them, we need longer than 6 to 9 months to work with those children. Children this age will not wind up in jail. They will not wind up in adult court. They will not wind up in a youth detention center because they're too young. What it does is give the court longer to monitor the situation, longer to follow these few children. And as Alan McNeil told you, Representative McNeil told you, 1,100 of those kids are out of the juvenile system by this and into that counseling situation. It's those 50 or 60 cases that have happened with just a few juvenile defendants, juvenile delinquents, that we are tackling with this problem. Those who have this kind of background or emotional trauma or something that's caused them to act out in this way need more care than they're going to get in 6 to 9 months. We are equating the behavior they did with the kid who just acted up in school, the kid who was truant, the kid who stole candy because it looked good at the store. Those kids are out of this altogether. This is only those most serious of offenses. We had this agreement with juvenile justice and the Conference of District Attorneys. They are all in support of this, and we ask that you continue to support this.
What purpose, gentleman from Wake, Representative John Rice.
Debate the bill.
Gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I'm not going to speak long. I just want you all to have an idea of the 21 folks who are on this Juvenile Justice Advocacy Juvenile JJAC Committee. I'm not going to give their names, but I'm going to give the designation from which they came. Representative from the Victim Advocacy Community. Representative from the Juvenile Advocacy Committee. Sheriff. Representative from the Victim Advocacy Committee, that happens to be a judge. Representative from the Juvenile Advocacy Committee, District Attorney. Representative from the Juvenile Justice Planning Committee of the Governor's Crime Commission. Executive Director of the North Carolina Sentencing and Policy Advisory Commission. Chief Court Counselor, Rural County. Director of the Division of Mental Health, Developmental Disabilities, and Substance Abuse Services of the Department of Health and Human Services, a Clerk of Superior Court, Deputy Commissioner for the Juvenile Justice of the Division of Adult Correction and Juvenile Justice of the Department of Public Safety, Police Chief, Superintendent of Public Instruction, Superior Court Judge, Chief Court Counselor, Urban County, Chief District Court Judge, Assistant Public Defender who handles juvenile matters, Assistant District Attorney who handles juvenile matters, Director of the Administrative Office of the Courts, and Juvenile Defender in the Office of Indigent Defense. I read all those so you understand. This is not some group of individuals who selected willy-nilly. These are all responsible individuals selected to participate in a committee established by this body, this legislative body, the House and Senate of the North Carolina General Assembly. We set them at a task to look at these issues. They looked at them and came back with a recommendation that passed muster several times until very recently. I recommend that we support the Morey Amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise?
Speak on the amendment a second time.
Lady has for debate the amendment a second time.
Thank you, and I appreciate the time we're taking on this amendment. What I have just heard, that we have worked on this, we have agreed with the DA's conference, we have agreed with the Sheriff's Association. Well, that we did not include this side of the aisle. We talked about the budget, and we talked about our doors are open, and let's talk, and let's share ideas. Well, it sure didn't happen in this. I've worked on this for years. Have I been a part of any of the conversations? No, I stopped. I've spent my life working with kids and in these juvenile courts. And what I quoted you about capacity is in our statutes, and we're ignoring that if we do this carve out. And because we've heard some heinous crime examples, kids, 9-year-olds killing their parents, that doesn't change the definition of capacity. I urge you to support this amendment. Let's do it clean. Let's follow the majority of states. We will get these children help. It doesn't end at a magic 6 to 9 months. Mental health services are available throughout our state, social services, but not punitive for these young children who do not yet have the capacity in a courtroom or to create criminal intent. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jones, rise?
Speak to the amendment.
Gentleman has the floor.
I guess I'll add my voice to the other two former judges in this chamber and say that we don't need to do this on the nine-year-olds. I'm going to cite something. I'm sure all of you remember this happening. Back a ways, two guys grabbed the president's student body at UNC and took her around the bank, made her take money out, and then they killed her. I was on the bench then. And one of those guys was on probation. And after that happened, and we all know that's a horrible, ugly, vicious, sinful piece of work. Awful. But after that happened, I, as a judge, for a couple, 3 years, watched probationers who had been doing excellently get recommendations of revocation, 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 because the officers became scared that they would let that one guy through who would do the ugly thing those guys did to that young lady. What I'm saying is we shouldn't let a couple, three instances of some bad nine-year-olds that would do horrid things control the policy for thousands and thousands of the nine-year-olds who would never do that, ever. I just think it's bad policy to let the ugly case drive the policy. And that's what happened in that case, and I remember witnessing it as a judge, and the recommendations just totally flipped. Good probation officer, suddenly their judgment got blinded. I don't want to make that one mistake. So I'm not going to give this good guy a good recommendation because he might be the one that slips through. And that's not the way we should make policy. So I endorse the amendment and the remarks of Representative John, Representative Morey. Thank you for hearing me out. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quick, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To ask Representative Stevens, I think, a question.
Representative Stevens, does the lady yield? She yields.
Thank you. Representative Stevens, do you know why 8 and 9 year olds were carved out of the JJAC recommendation? The JJAC recommendation included 8 and 9 year olds being a part of it, what we're doing for 6 and 7 year olds. Do you know why?
We did not get any detailed information on the basis of the JJAC report, and that is simply an advisory committee. Representative McNeil and I have also worked with these children in both law enforcement and legal capacity. It is a minimal number. It's not thousands, and it's really only 50 or 60 kids that we're looking at over the last 2 or 3 years, but those are important enough to work on saving.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, may I speak to the amendment a second time?
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you. I think I forgot to ask for support of this amendment, so I wanted to explicitly ask for support of this amendment. As we were told in rules today, 75% of these cases are able to be handled in a way that I think will be satisfactory to everybody. So as Representative Jones said, let's don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Thank you.
For what purpose, gentleman from Burke, Representative Blackwell, rise?
I'd like to ask Representative Morey a question, if she would yield.
Representative Morey, is the lady yield?
Happy to.
She yields.
Thank you. You referred to the need to avoid treating the 8 and 9 year olds in a punitive manner. I think Representative Stevens was suggesting earlier that there were certain things that normally might occur with older individuals that are convicted or in the court system that maybe we would all consider punitive. But what are the punitive things that you are objecting to that happen to 8 and 9 year olds?
Thank you for the question. One is you're stigmatizing them. You're calling them, labeling them delinquents in a legal matter, in a legal term that can follow them. There are punitive matters because they can go to detention. A judge can lock them up in detention pending the next court hearing, pending whatever reason that judge wants to do. They can be locked, strip searched, go into detention. They're not eligible to go to youth development center, but I would say that's pretty punitive. Their families, they would have to be required to report to probation. They would have to be required to do any number of things a judge would require. That may not be punitive. It may be helpful. But usually dispositions, and we, as we talk about the more serious offenders, and I think that was referenced, they need sanctions. They need punitive measures. And on these children that young, many of whom are victims themselves of poverty, of crime, of abuse in their family, is this the way we want to respond to them?
And, Mr. Speaker, if I might also ask, I'm at maybe Representative John, but Representative Morey or Stevens may know the answer to this question. There have been a number of references to the recommendation of the commission or committee that was set up, and Representative John enumerated the membership. Was that a unanimous recommendation from that group, or do we know?
Is there a member that knows, that has knowledge of that, Representative Morey?
They issued a report, and their report was unequivocal that they wanted to see the minimum age raised to the age of 10 with no exclusions, and they wanted any 11 and 12-year-old who would be charged to have a capacity hearing before a judge before they could have any adjudication.
Representative Stevens, did the lady also wish to respond to that question?
Thank you. I will tell you that capacity is still very much at issue. She indicated they issued the report, but I do understand that it was not unanimous. I've talked to a couple of members on there who either weren't present or would have voted against it or did vote against it. So I don't think it was a unanimous report.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, rise?
To debate amendment a second time.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, and it's good points. Representative Blackwell, that's exactly one of the questions I was going to ask of if it was a unanimous support from the 21 members. And I gather that it wasn't. But anyway, I think we're forgetting as we've gotten emotional again, and we talked about these kids that are running and kicking ball and all that stuff. But one thing that nobody keeps, you know, I think I'm the only one that has mentioned the victims in this, you know. Heaven help that we should stigmatize a 9-year-old that has raped someone. What about the person they raped? Has that stigmatized them? You know, you without the Morey Amendment, this takes all the 6- and 7-year-olds completely out. It doesn't make a difference what crime they commit. You can't charge them with it. It takes 95% of the crimes that a 8- and 9-year-old could commit totally out of the system. Can't charge them with a crime. It just leaves the A through G felonies, which is the most serious and heinous of the crimes. Don't forget the victims. You can talk about the perpetrators. You can talk about the juveniles. You can talk about their mental capacity all you want. But if they've got the mental capacity to rape someone or point a gun at someone or commit an armed robbery, whether there's an adult involved or not, it doesn't make a difference. There's still a victim on the other side of that, and that's what everybody seems to be forgetting in this. So once you vote for this, if you vote for the Morey Amendment, you take 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds completely out of the system. Never again in this state will you ever be able to charge them with any crime, no matter what it is. I think that's, like I said before, that is a bridge too far. Once you ring that bell today, if you vote for the Morey Amendment, you can't unring it. You can't go back. Please vote this amendment down.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise.
To ask a question of Representative McNeil.
Which member?
Representative McNeil.
Representative McNeil, does the gentleman yield?
I do.
He yields.
Ken, would you mind laying out statistics of the crimes, the number of crimes, the prevalence of 8- and 9-year-olds doing some of the heinous crimes that you outlined? Because I'd love to hear, and seriously, for educational purposes for the body, I think that would be enlightening, because I think we are maybe not talking about this as completely as we could without the detail and those types of statistics to give us some clarity, because a lot, you know, not all of us are law enforcement or in attorney.
Yes, sir. I'd be glad to, Mr. Speaker, if I'm allowed to reference this.
Gentleman is allowed to respond.
Okay. Assault by pointing a gun. 1 9-year-old. Assault on a government official. 1 6-year-old. 11 8-year-olds. And 10 9-year-olds. Assault inflicting injury by strangulation. 1 9-year-old. Assault inflicted serious injury. 1 6-year-old, 1 7-year-old, 1 9-year-old. Assault on a school employee, 1 6-year-old, 2 7-year-olds, 3 8-year-olds, and 12 9-year-olds. Assault with a deadly weapon, 2 8-year-olds, 2 9-year-olds. Breaking or entering, 7-year-old, 2 9-year-olds. Burning an occupied dwelling, 1 8-year-old. Excuse me, an unoccupied building. Burning personal property, 7-year-old and 9-year-old. Crime against nature, 5 8-year-olds, 6 9-year-olds. First degree arson, 1 7-year-old, 1 9-year-old. First degree kidnapping, 1 7-year-old and 1 9-year-old. First degree sexual exploitation of a minor, 2 9-year-olds. Do you want me to go on? Because I've got several more. I just don't want to waste the body's time.
Follow, Mr. Speaker. Do we know how that also equates to the number of students that are involved in the criminal justice system? And then, you know, there are 1.2 million kids who are in at least public school systems. So we're talking about a really minuscule number that you're trying to ask us not to address by voting against the amendment. Is that correct?
Over the period of this study, there were a little over 1,100 juveniles, 6 to 9-year-old, that committed a little over 2,000 crimes. So quite often when a juvenile is charged with committing a crime, they're charged with committing more than one crime. So you've got 1,100 juveniles, but a little over 2,000 crimes. Some of them may have committed just one crime. Some may have committed three or four. Of those 1,100, 142 by my count were the most serious crimes, some of which I mentioned. There were several I didn't mention, such as second-degree forcible rape, 1 8-year-old and 13 9-year-olds. So I didn't read everything on the report, but of the 1,100 juveniles that were encompassed this study, without the Morey Amendment, the way the bill stands right now, you're going to take all 1,100 of those out of the system except five. And that's the five that have committed the worst crimes. So you're getting 95% of these 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds out of the system. And I think that is as far as we need to go. But if you need any more statistics, I've got several more I can read. But that is information that was provided to me by the Department of Public Safety.
Speak to the bill.
The chairman has the floor.
Thank you for that information. And as you've heard from many, we're still talking about 6 to 9-year-olds, and we're talking about a very small number. And I hope that you'll join Representative Morey and vote for this amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose the Lay from Durham resident of Austin rise?
I was going to ask, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was going to ask Representative Morey a question if she'll yield.
Representative Morey, how do you yield?
I do.
Yield.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just briefly, much has been made of the fact that this PCS only applies, or the modification for 8 and 9-year-olds applies to the most serious felonies. And so I just wanted to clarify for everyone's benefit that our felony code is arranged alphabetically A through I, and this PCS applies to felonies A through G, only excluding two felony classes. Am I correct?
May I respond?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Yes, it does not include H and I's. H's are like breaking and enterings, larceny under $1,000.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, we have one more light. Are there any other members who wish to debate this amendment? All right. We'd ask the members to perhaps keep their remarks short. We've not called the question, but just sensing the room, I think most members are probably ready to vote. For what purpose is the gentleman from Wake, Representative John Ross?
Very briefly, Mr. Speaker, to debate the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
A second time. Thank you. In the members, in the letter of transmission of its recommendations dated May 6, 2021 from the commission, the committee, the JJAC committee, to the General Assembly, it states its recommendation that it supports raising the minimum age of juvenile jurisdiction for all offenses from 6 to 10. That doesn't resolve the issue of whether it was unanimous or not. However, later in that same transmission, there is a third recommendation, and they note specifically one dissent was entered from this specific recommendation. So I infer from that, and I suggest to you that the recommendation of the JJAC committee was indeed unanimous in this regard. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A1 sent forward by Representative Morey. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Zinger wished to vote. Representative Davis wished to vote. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 41, having voted in the affirmative, 58 in the negative, the amendment fails. We're now back on the bill. Further discussion or debate on the bill. For what purpose, the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quickrise.
Speak to the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
Previous argument notwithstanding, this is a good bill. It does do a good thing for North Carolina. It brings us in line with other states. It helps us in our criminal justice system, particularly as it deals with juveniles. And I also want to say I make no apologies for being emotional about the children of North Carolina. It's an emotional situation, and we all want the best thing for our children. We disagree sometimes on the way to get there, but I want to commend the bill sponsors for this bill. I want to commend our state if this vote is favorable, that we've made a move in the right direction. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Wake, Representative John Rice.
I'll debate the bill briefly. The
gentleman has the floor.
Thank you. And notwithstanding, similar to Representative Quick, my previous concern about the shortcomings of this bill, I think otherwise it is a very, very adequate and responsible bill. I'll be voting yes and ask respectfully that you join me in doing so. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, away from Durham, Representative Morey, rise.
It will not be to send up a second amendment.
He's recognized to debate the bill.
Just to briefly say thank you very much for a good debate. I honor everyone and your comments and your thoughts and your opinions. This is a good bill. It will help a lot of kids. We'll be back sometime, but I do encourage you to vote for the bill.
Further discussion, further debate? Not the question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 207 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk, lock machine, record the vote. 101, having voted in the affirmative, 1 in the negative. Senate Bill 207 passed the second reading without objection. Be read third time.
Senator Bill Kline, next.
Question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 207 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 207, having passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. Senate Bill 314, the clerk will read.
Senate Bill 314, Local Government Commission Assistance Toolkit, General Assembly of North Carolina.
Who's handling this bill? Senate Bill 314, Local Government Commission Assistance Toolkit. Representative Bell, would the gentleman like to make a motion to adopt a conference report? Gentleman's recognized for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that we adopt Conference Report 314. Thank you, sir.
Gentleman's moved the House adopt the conference report to Senate Bill 314. Further discussion, further debate. Not the question for the House is the adoption of the conference bill on Senate Bill 314. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed to vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk Lock Machine record the vote. 102 having voted in the affirmative, none of the negative. The House has adopted the conference report, Senate Bill 314. The Senate will be so notified. House Resolution 972. The clerk will read.
Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House, House Resolution 972. House Resolution electing William P. Bill McBriar, Jr., and M. U. Barnes, Jr., to serve as members of the State Board of Community Colleges. General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized to debate the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, these are just two appointments to the, two of the speaker's appointments to the State Board of Community Colleges. These folks were vetted through the normal process. Their SEIs are in the packet. I'd ask for your support.
Further discussion, further debate? Not the question for the House is the adoption of House Resolution 972. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Blackwell, Representative Majeed, Representative Everett, members wish to vote. Is Representative Everett all in the hallway? Clerk will lock machine record the vote. 101 having voted in the affirmative, none of the negative. House Resolution 972 passes its second reading. Pursuant to Article 6, Section 5 of the North Carolina Constitution, the adoption of the resolution is affirmed by viva voce. All those in favor will say aye. All those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Resolution 972 having been confirmed both by electronically and viva voce pursuant to the Constitution is ordered enrolled. For what purpose does the gentleman from Pitt, Representative Farkas, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Briefly, there was a procedural vote on 366 to bring it in from to go ahead with the conference committee report. I wanted to make sure I was recorded voting no on that, if possible.
So that on the is the gentleman wishing to vote no on the motion to reconsider?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay. The gentleman will be recorded as having voted no on the motion to reconsider.
Thank you.
Mr. Court, Chair directs that Senate Bill 85, short title, allow vision service plans be withdrawn from the Committee on Health, referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, Operations of the House. Let's go back up to Local Bill 353, back before the body on third reading. It's already been read. Representative Baker is recognized to send forth an amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Baker moves to amend the bill on page 1, lines 2 through 4, rewriting those lines to read.
The lady is recognized to speak to the amendment.
Thank you, sir. I'm asking for support of this amendment. We have, in my office, received strong opposition to this particular bill. Supporting this amendment will allow us to have some community conversations around exactly what it is that the community would like in regards to moving our school board elections. This has been a contentious discussion within our community, and we know that when we allow for vigorous debate and conversation, that we get a more accurate picture of what people want concerning changes of this nature. So I ask that you support this amendment, which will allow us in Winston-Salem to have a more thoughtful conversation with our community at large, our school board members, and our parents and other stakeholders around changing our election dates. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Forsyth, Representative Lambeth, rise?
Or ask the body to reject that amendment.
Gentlemen's recognized to debate the amendment.
I would tell you that I've actually had positive results, and I would remind you that 115 school boards, 112 have staggered terms. Not sure why this is that complicated. It does not change any incumbent that's elected. This is applicable to the, for the next election. And I have talked to the school board, and some don't like change. I get that, but others do. And I think this is good public policy, just like 112 school boards have already adopted staggered terms. So I ask that you reject this as it would gut the bill.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? For what purpose, the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Lofton, rise?
To ask Representative Lambeth a question.
Representative Lambeth, the gentleman yield?
Glad to.
He yields.
Am I correct, am I correct in inferring from what you said that the school board is in fact split on this and they have not adopted a resolution asking for this measure?
I'm not aware of a resolution either way. I have talked to them a couple times in meetings with them, and some support it and some do not support it.
Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House, the adoption of Amendment A1 set forward by Representative Baker. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. In the opinion of the chair, the noes have it. The noes do have it. The amendment fails. We're now back on the bill. Further discussion, further debate on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. House Bill 353, having passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. For what purpose, the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to be recorded as a yes on the Maury Amendment to 207, Senate Bill 207, the Maury Amendment.
The lady will be recorded as having voted aye on the amendment to Senate Bill 207. Senate Bill 300, the clerk will read.
Senators Britt, Daniels, and Lee, Senate Bill 300, a bill to be entitled Criminal Justice Reform. General Assembly of North Carolina next.
The lady from Surrey, Representative Stevens, is recognized to debate the bill.
I'm a little afraid to debate it because there is two amendments from Representative Maury and I'm already being punished for the one, but anyway. This is a comprehensive criminal justice reform bill that comes to us from Danny Britt. He has found it to be supported by the Sheriff's Association, the PBA, the Conference of DAs, Americans for Prosperity, the John Locke Foundation, among various others. It does a lot of good criminal justice reform. It creates a public database of law enforcement officer certification and revocations. It requires all law enforcement officers' fingerprints to be entered into state and federal databases. It authorizes law enforcement agents to participate in the FBI's criminal background check systems. It creates a database for critical incident information, which includes death or serious bodily injury. It requires written notification of giglio material, credibility issues that would make an officer open to impeachment by defense in a trial, and they've got to be reported. It requires written notification, allows healthcare providers to transport respondents and an involuntary commitment. It provides an in-person instruction by mental health professionals and develops policies to encourage officers to utilize those. It creates an early warning system within each law enforcement agency to monitor officer actions and behaviors that could indicate a problem. It requires the creation of a best practice recruitment guide to encourage diversity. It expands mandatory in-service training for officers to include mental health topics, community policing, minority sensitivity, use of force, and the duty to intervene and report. It creates a duty for officers to intervene and report any excessive force by another officer. It increases the penalties for those who resist and obstruct arrest, and while doing so, injure law enforcement officers. It includes material from the following House bills. House Bill 547 regarding the decertification index. House 548, the Giglio material bill. That's already passed. House Bill 436, that's also already passed, of psychological screenings in officer mental health. House Bill 123 regarding mandatory first appearances for defendants charged with a misdemeanor and held more than 72 hours. House Bill 536 about law enforcement officers' duty to intervene. All of those are things that we've already heard and passed over to them, are also included in this. There is one additional provision that was brought forth in rules today by Senator Davis and was actually sent forth by Representative Torbett. I might ask any questions on that. It has to do with the use of and display of video camera by footage when there's a death or serious disability. And I know there's an amendment about that, and I've asked Representative McNeil to respond to concerns. It's not his amendment, but ask him to respond to some of those concerns. Thank you.
Representative Morey is recognized to send forth Amendment ASA 59. The clerk will read. After the clerk reads, the lady has the floor to debate the amendment.
Representative Morey moves to amend the bill on page 27, lines 15 through 24, by rewriting those lines to read.
Lady has floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 300 has a lot of provisions. A lot is really good. I really applaud Senator Britt, Representative Stevens for this bill. This amendment deals with the amendment that came up this morning in rules, specifically to the body cams and the disclosure. What this amendment does, if all parties agree that the family or the representative can see the body cam, the sheriff agrees, law enforcement agrees, let them see the body cam video footage. This means they don't have to go to court. They don't have to petition. The judge doesn't have to hear it within 10 days. It's simply, if everyone agrees, let's de-escalate a tense situation. Let's show them the footage. They can see the footage. If there is a disagreement, the rest of the bill as written stands. So I ask you to support this amendment.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, rise.
Thank you. To debate the Morey Amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Again, I'm going to have to stand and ask the body to reject this amendment. I was involved in the writing of the original body camera footage. And in the original law, a law enforcement head could already release already disclose. So this amendment is not necessary. It takes the court out of the process completely. It basically says that if the person agrees, the law enforcement head agrees, then they can disseminate it. Well, you've got 500 and some police chiefs across this state. You got 100 different sheriffs across this state. So that's over 600 people. So in one place, there may be an agreement to release it. In another place, there may not. You've got 600 different opportunities for 600 different outcomes. So let's leave it in the court. That's where it belongs. Body camera footage is evidence. Disposition of evidence is in the bailiwick of the courts and should only be decided by the courts. So I ask you to defeat this amendment, leave the disclosure, of the body camera footage with the courts where it belongs. And I appreciate your voting red on this amendment.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, rise.
Speak on the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as many of you know, may not know, I serve on the Rules Committee. You have to be on the Rules Committee to submit an amendment to a bill being heard in the rules, just like any other committee. Senator Don Davis brought this to me and quickly explained it right before committee. And I went to Danny Britt, Senator Britt, and he was okay with it. They had already had the conversation, had agreed upon it. It seemed like it was a good amendment to Senator Britt. And I went to our experts in police on this side of the aisle, and they said they were good with it. We heard that sheriffs were for it. No one in opposition for it, as I heard of. I would, had it not been for just the relationship that Senator Davis and I have, my respect for him and his respect for me, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. So out of respect for Senator Don Davis, I would ask you that you do not support this amendment.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise?
Speak a second time on the amendment.
Lady has the floor.
Once again, the perfect, easy example. My child is killed. Officer involvement. I go to my police chief. They say, let me show you the body cam. I see it. Thank you. It's over. Why do we have to wait and petition and go to a court and wait up to 10 days for a Superior Court judge to rule on what is already agreed on? We can de-escalate a lot of heavy emotions if the parties and law enforcement are in agreement on it. My understanding, the chief of police also agree with this. Please support the amendment.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment. If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A1, set forth by Representative Morey. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the noes have it. The noes do have it, and the amendment fails. Representative Morey is recognized to send forth Amendment ASA 60. The clerk will read.
Representative Morey moves to amend the bill on page 27, lines 29 through 30, by rewriting those lines to read.
Representative Morey has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a very simple amendment. What it does, it takes out any criminal penalty from a family member or personal representative. We have in there this provision that they could be charged with a Class I felony if they replicate a video, or a misdemeanor if they possibly talk about what they've seen in the video. Let's not add criminal penalties to victims, family of victims who are allowed to see videos. We don't need this. A judge's order could put them in contempt of court if the judge felt that was important. But let's take out this Class I felony, Class I misdemeanor, and allow families or personal representatives to be able to talk about what they've seen regarding their own family member. Please support the amendment.
Gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you. Again, I rise to ask you to vote no for this on this amendment. The language is already in the bill that says it may not be knowingly disseminated, and I think the word knowingly was put in there to cover what some of her concerns were as to whether you've got a situation where someone may disseminate it and didn't necessarily know that there was an issue with that. But what she's asking you to do is eliminate the part of this bill that has the criminal penalties in it. And the reason there's criminal penalties in it is because if you pass this bill without the criminal penalties in it, then what you're going to have is anybody that records one of these body camera and then disseminates it, there's no penalty. So it's going to happen. And a lot of times that's going to actually inflame the situation more than it already is. So if you want to keep people from disseminating this or recording it illegally, leave the penalties in, vote no on the Morey Amendment. There has to be some penalty in the bill to keep this from happening. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson, rise?
To debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Members, I really wish we would have passed that first amendment earlier because there was an argument made by my good friend Representative McNeil when he said we should leave this in the hands of the court. The court has in its inherent powers the ability to hold people in either civil contempt or criminal contempt. In a situation like this, the victim's family or the family that wants to see these films, the body cameras, are in a situation where they're going to be hounded by our good friends, the press. The press can be very persuasive. They can be very tricky when they want something. And to put a person or a family in the position of a criminal being faced with a crime and faced with what else they've been faced with is a pretty difficult thing. Let's leave this in the inherent powers of the court to ferret out and to work out. You let them use their criminal and their civil contempt proceedings to do it, but let's do not make it a crime. There's just too many examples or ways in which a person could get in trouble even if they didn't intend to disseminate it. And I think that letting the court decide that's the best way. Please vote in favor of this amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jones, rise?
Speak to this the bill.
The gentleman has forward to debate the amendment.
You know, society has gone through a lot of trouble on this recording thing. People taking pictures of what law enforcement's doing. When I was a judge for 17 years wearing a robe, I couldn't do anything that wasn't recorded. I was advised by those who were senior to me, though, even when you go inside of the conference with the attorneys, take your court reporter because you want to protect yourself and you want to protect the system. And the reason we do that is so people everywhere will have confidence in us. Confidence, trust the system. So we give a law enforcement officer, and I support law enforcement 110% in most instances because they have a hard job. They have a gun and a badge. And if they're dealing with you in a situation and they use that gun for whatever their reason, they thought they made a judgment, they had to make a snap judgment, they make it. And they should be, it should be looked at. Why do we not even want to look? What's so fearful about that? Just look. Let the people see what happened. Most of the instances, there'd be an argument to support what the officer did. That's what I believe from my experience. But in those tragic cases, sometimes there isn't. The people have a right to see. They have a right to know. And that's all this is about, transparency. 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 That's what we want to have in our society, particularly those who have the power of life and death. Thank you.
What purpose, gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quick Rice?
To ask Representative Morey a question or two.
Representative Morey's lady yield to a series of questions.
Yes.
She yields.
Representative Morey, am I understanding correctly that without your amendment, the following scenario could be true? I could be driving down the street unrelated to the incident. I could film what's happening, including someone being bodily injured or killed by law enforcement. I could post that on Facebook. There'd be no penalty for me doing that. However, if I'm a family member and I go in and watch body cam footage and I come out and even talk about what I saw on body cam footage as a family member of a person seriously injured or deceased, I could face criminal charges.
I believe that to be true.
Thank you. May I speak to the amendment?
The gentleman has floor to debate the amendment.
The following real life scenario makes this amendment necessary because a person on the street could film all of the actions of law enforcement, post it on social media, and face no consequence. But a family member could go in and sit down and watch the bodily injury or the death of their family member. And as the bill is written, there's some question about even if the family member goes out and talks about what they saw, they could face criminal prosecution. Makes no sense. Please vote for the amendment.
For what purpose, gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, rise.
Thank you. Real brief comments.
And recognize debate the amendment. Second
thank time. You. And I was going to get up and clarify this before Representative Quick and Maury made their statement, that they're totally wrong. You know, this bill says that it's a crime to disseminate it. Disseminate and discuss is not the same thing. You can discuss it all you want to. Read the bill as much as you want to. Talk as many lawyers as you want to. There's nothing in this bill that says it's a crime to discuss it with anyone. It's disseminate. So vote the amendment down. Read.
Further discussion, further debate. For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quick, rise?
To debate the amendment a second time.
Gentlemen, recognize debate the amendment a second time.
I'd like to modify my remarks by exchanging the word discuss to disseminate. So if I, as a person on the street, could view, film, post to social media the same scenario, but as a family member, if I disseminate it, how I'm going to disseminate, I don't know. The family member would be charged with the crime. Whether we're discussing or disseminating, it makes no sense that the average person on the street could post for the whole world to see, but the family member would be the one who would face criminal prosecution. Still doesn't make sense. Please vote for the amendment.
For what purpose is the lady from Durham, Representative Morey Rice?
To speak a second time.
The lady has floor to debate the amendment a second time.
Well, and when Representative McNeil said the word disseminate, if you look it up in the Oxford Dictionary, it doesn't say if it's written or oral. It's either. It's widely spread. So that's a problem with what's written in our original bill. We don't know what disseminate means. And if someone, as in Representative Quick's example, talks about it, they might be subject to prosecution.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A2 sent forward by Representative Morey. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, notice have it, but division having been called, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A2, sent forward by Representative Morey. Those in favor of the amendment will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Dahl, Representative Stevens on the floor. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 41 having voted in the affirmative and 59 in the negative, the amendment fails. We are now back on the bill. Further discussion, further debate on the bill. If not, the question before the House is the passage of Senate Bill 300 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Baker on the floor. Baker, aye. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 100 having voted in the affirmative, 2 in the negative. Senate Bill 300 passed a second reading without objection. We'll be read a third time.
General Assembly, North Carolina, aye.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 300 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 300 having passed third reading will be sent to the Senate. Members, here is the plan for tomorrow. First of all, to give a referral, Senate Bill 636, short titles Donor Privacy. The chair strikes the referral to the Committee on Rules. The bill will be heard in Judiciary 2. Thereafter, will be eligible to be calendared. Senate Bill 490, License to Work. The referral to the Rules Committee is stricken on that bill. The referral to the Committee on Transportation is also stricken, and we will determine if that bill will be added to tomorrow's calendar or not. Members, the two bills the chair just read are bills that will be heard in J2 tomorrow morning at 8:30, and those are two bills the chair intends to add to tomorrow's calendar for 10 a.m. We're looking at having an early session tomorrow morning. A couple of reasons. One, and I see my colleagues from the western part of the state, just want you to be keep the folks in far western North Carolina in your thoughts and prayers. As many of you may have heard, there was some pretty serious flooding associated with the tropical storm that moved into western North Carolina. Very serious flooding where basically it just got all funneled down the mountain into one area, into the rivers there, and I believe Canton and a couple other cities there were particularly hit hard. And so I wanted to try to undertake session a little earlier tomorrow because I know those members want to try to get back to their communities to just to see what's happening and make sure resources are appropriately there. But we generally think of floods in the east, but certainly they can happen in the mountains as well. And so I know one of our members, Representative Pless, actually drove up yesterday after session all the way up and then all the way back. So I'm guessing you drove all night long. So I'm amazed you're awake back there. But to actually survey and talk to folks and make sure that state resources were being deployed where they needed to be. So I did want to try to make that accommodation for our western members who I know want to get back where there's quite a bit of damage, but at the same time wanted to be here to carry out their duties as legislators. So we do intend to have a short session. So my advice to any other committee chairs who want to meet is meet early. J2's meeting at 8:30. Any other committees can meet, but we do intend on having a session at 10 a.m. And the chair does intend to take up the bills that do get reported out of those committees. That would conclude the business for the week once we resolve those bills tomorrow. So would anticipate to be a pretty short day tomorrow. The conferees to the budget will be appointed at adjournment. I can tell the body that we are having conversations. The corner offices have had conversations about where we are. There's several pathways to go. There's a pathway that takes a really long time. There's a pathway that may not take as long of a time. I certainly want to explore an opportunity that may allow us to resolve things more quickly, if possible. But we'll continue to work through that and keep members informed. So with that, notices and announcements. For what purpose does the gentleman from Swain, Representative Clampett, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, the Speaker alluded to the flooding in Haywood County. I just wanted to pass on to you with that. We don't think of flooding as in Haywood County and the mountains like we do out at the coast, but I forwarded an email to everyone in the House a while ago showing some of the pictures from the local paper there. That's something like you'd see at the coast, more of a flatland area. In my short life, 66 years, I've never seen any kind of flooding of that nature and that magnitude back home. Just to give you an example, the Pigeon River that goes through Canton, Clyde, and in that area and goes over to Tennessee, it crested today at 19.6 feet, and that was 3 feet over the last record at 16 feet 0.6 in 2004. That's the highest on record ever. Something that's not been mentioned, but let me pass on to you of very importance. There are 30 people currently unaccounted for. The news hasn't said a lot about that, but I did watch the back home news today at noon 13. They did mention it. I did get a call from a constituent this afternoon telling me that they have a family member that's missing, and that had a landslide, mountain slide there in the Crusoe area, which seemed to have taken a big hit. There's still 11,000 people without power. There are folks that are staying in a shelter at the Tuscola High School there. I'm asking everyone, as well as Representative Pless, we share Haywood County together. Stay off the roads, folks. Let the rescue workers and DOT get the roads clear of the debris. We got bridges that are messed up that can't be passable. They can't get across. They also got a lot of mud on the roads. Let me give a shout out to New Hanover County, Wilmington, Greensboro, and the other Swiftwater rescue teams that have gone up from North Carolina. There's approximately 250 rescuers up there now looking for those individuals. We are still in a rescue mode. Please consider prayers, and we'll be addressing some relief for these folks later on as soon as we get a damage assessment. We don't know everything yet, but it's very far-reaching. I have had calls today also from farmers that have lost all their millage and silage and their hay fields, and we have a lot of nurseries there too. But let's focus on the loss of life. Hopefully there's not any, and these people will be recovered that they're at some shelter somewhere. So thank you, Mr. Speaker. Appreciate your time.
Yes, sir. For what purpose, gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, rise.
For an announcement.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, sir. Republicans, we're going to caucus immediately after session. That room has been changed to 1228 right downstairs to make it more convenient. So I won't lose you between here and there. So please be prompt. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Surrey, Representative Stevens, rise?
For an announcement.
Lady has the floor.
Members, I think the Speaker just alluded to he would like us to have a judiciary meeting at 8:30 in the morning. It will be in room 415. We'll take up two bills. Senate Bill 490, License to Work, and the other one, I'm just trying to make sure I've got the correct bill number. It's the Donor Privacy Bill. It's Senate Bill 636. So 8:30, hopefully we'll be prompt. Thanks.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, rise?
Mr. Speaker, having submitted representative's statement with the clerk, ask that it be read in its entirety upon adjournment. Spread across the journal, would like to be recognized to speak to the statement.
So ordered, and the gentleman is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the House, Christopher Lawrence served as a law enforcement officer for the Gaston County Police Department for 28 years, where he was patrolman, sergeant, canine handler, and SWAT team member. After his retirement, December 2020, he worked for several months as a school resource officer for an area elementary school. And as a way to celebrate his retirement, Christopher decided he would complete a 4,200-mile cross-country bike ride from Astoria, Oregon, to Yorktown, Virginia, along that route known to cyclists as the Transamerica Trail. And coincidental to his trip, Christopher decided he would help bring awareness of law enforcement officer suicide and first responder mental health issues by raising funds for Blue HELP, HELP, which stands for Honor, Educate, Lead, and Prevent. A nonprofit organization that aids families who have lost a family member to suicide and helps to prevent suicide by providing resources to first responders and training to various organizations. On August 1, 2021, Christopher returned to Gaston County to a warm welcome of family, friends, law enforcement officers, and many others, having completed his trip as scheduled and raised more funds than his initial goal. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, sir. Thank you. For what purpose, lady from Surrey, Representative Stevens, rise.
Announcement.
Please recognize.
We've had to switch rooms. Judiciary 2 will meet in 421 instead of 415. We didn't realize it had already been taken. Thanks.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Lucas, rise.
For a moment of personal privilege.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, my seatmate, the gentle lady to my right, arrived here about 20 years ago. And when she arrived, she immediately stepped forward. And I don't know of anybody in this chamber who's had something contrary to say about her. She's just that kind of lady. But you know, she's been so effective in this chamber that you'd hardly know that she has experienced challenges. In fact, she experienced one challenge that led to almost a reincarnation. That didn't stop her either. But with courage and the blend of family adaptation, cooperation, imagination, she continues to give all of us inspiration through her family, especially with Jean and the extended family members. And she's going to celebrate tomorrow 32 years of wedded bliss. Please join me in recognizing that.
Congratulations, Representative Carney. For what purpose does the gentleman from Forsyth, Representative Zinger, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It was 19 years ago today that I was involved in one of the most profound experiences of my entire life. I delivered my youngest daughter, Emma. So today's her birthday. She's 19. And she's turned out to be a remarkable woman, and I just wanted to say happy birthday to her today. Thank you.
Congratulations. For what purpose, the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise.
Inquiry, Chair. The
gentleman's recognized.
Many of us have heard about the condition of our colleague from District 79, Representative Keith Kidwell. I know that I have had the pleasure of texting with him, and he said God's grace is sort of bringing him and his family through, but I think it would be great for the body to know from the speaker how he's doing, and also sort of the state of how we're handling COVID in the building.
Thank you. Representative Kidwell actually has improved. He is at home, and I think he continues to get better, and so he's home recuperating, and I know he hopes to join us in the near future. Don't know exactly what date, but he is doing better.
Good. Follow up, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, sir.
And also, not because of his, but just of some reports related to COVID management in the building. Do we have any sense of how we're going to make sure that we maintain as the Delta variant continues to do that? Because I say this openly that I value his life too, as my colleague and someone who had to worry about fighting for his wife, and, you know, I can imagine how worried his family was. Of course, many of us, you know, think about those same things here. So I just wanted to know how you think, as the body of the General Assembly, especially North Carolina House, how we're going to make sure that we take care of our members and staff.
Certainly. The chair is only aware of Representative Kidwell at this point as being the only member who is dealing with COVID. The chair is unaware of any other members. I believe there was reports that there was a staffer on the Senate side. The chair is unaware of any staffers on the House side. There is a policy in place that the LSO puts in place for all of the central staff that they are over that has a protocol. And I can tell you the protocol that I have with my staff is if anyone is in contact with someone that they believe to have been positive, if they show any symptoms whatsoever, they should stay away and they should be tested. I've certainly encouraged everyone to get a vaccine. I've recorded a PSA along with our governor and Senator Berger to do that. I think it's the right thing to do. Certainly have encouraged that, and we continue to do so. And as far as individuals wanting to use masks, that's certainly the individual's choice whether to wear a mask or not. We'll also continue to, as we've done, for example, on the voting, as the gentleman's probably aware, whereas we generally have a 10 seconds, the chair has extended a courtesy for members who want to stay off the floor and want to come in and vote to afford more time for that. We'll continue to do that. We still allow, for example, on the committees, for the remote-based meetings, and so I think the protocols that we have in place and we've had in place have proven successful, as we've not seen any kind of major spread of this or any spread, really, the chair is aware of, and certainly want to continue to keep practicing such a way.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, speak to a point of personal privilege.
Gentlemen, sir, can I speak to a point of personal privilege?
I want to join my colleagues from Western North Carolina. I do send prayers to those who are experiencing the flooding. I have a personal friend, the mayor of Canton, Mayor Zeb Smathers, friends I've known for about 20 years, so I know that he and along with the delegation are, you know, working hard to keep the people of Western North Carolina and Canton safe, and so I just want to send my prayers to he and his family as everyone deals with that difficult time. Thank you.
Yes, sir. For our purpose, gentlemen, from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise.
Personal privilege.
Gentleman's recognized. Speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to respond to Representative Hawkins' concern, Keith and Vicky. Vicky did come home from the hospital yesterday, and so they are improving. But do ask for your continued prayers. Thank you.
What purpose, gentlemen from Union? Representative Brody, rise.
For an announcement.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Committee of Local Government Land Development will finally meet in tomorrow morning. You saw the notice at 10 o'clock. That's just been overruled, and now it's at 9 o'clock. So, but we'll get a corrected notice out. We have four bills for us. Thank you.
Any further notices or announcements? Seeing none, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House to now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, August 19th at 10 a.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Hall moves, seconded by Representative Bell, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, August 19th at 10 a.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House stands adjourned.
Speaker appoints the following conferees for Senate Bill 105, 2021 Appropriations Act. Representative Arp, Chair. Lambeth, Chair. Sane, Chair. Bell. Kyle Hall. Destin Hall. Strickland. Dixon. Baumgartner. Hastings. Brisson. Hardister. Faircloth. Hurley. Torbett. Cleveland. Riddell. Kristen Baker. Potts. Sasser. White. Johnson. Bowles. Brendan Jones. Bradford. Setzer. Zoka. Kidwell. Brockman. Farkas. Graham, Hunter, Lucas, Pierce, Richardson, Willingham, and Ray. The following are non-voting advisory conferees for the Senate Bill 105, 2021 Appropriations Act. They are Representative Willis, Representative Winslow, and Representative Pickett. The Senate will be notified by a special message. And to committee assignments, the Speaker appoints the following member to the Families, Children, and Aging Policy Committee. Representative Pierce is added as a member.
Last assigned to David District Team 3. And whereas when he wasn't working, Jason Jones enjoyed spending time with his family, hunting and fishing, working home improvement projects, and support the Carolina Panthers. And whereas on December 16, 2020, tragically Jason was only 25 years old, was shot and killed while responding to a call attempted carjacking. Now, therefore, Officer Jason Shupig deserves to be recognized for his service to the Concord area community and to the Concord Police Department. A witness whereof to understand certifies that the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on the 18th day of August 2021, submitted by Representative Christian Baker, James White, House Principal Clerk. A reverend statement honoring Christopher Lawrence. Whereas Christopher Lawrence served as a law enforcement officer in Gaston County Public Police Department for 28 years, where he was a patrolman, sergeant, K-9 handler, and SWAT team member. After his retirement in December 2020, he worked for several months as a school officer in the area elementary school. And whereas, as a way of celebrating his retirement, Christopher decided he would complete a 4,200-mile cross-country bike ride in Astoria, Oregon, to Yorktown, Virginia, along the route known as the cyclist as the Transamerica Trail. Whereas, coincidental to his trip, Christopher decided to help bring awareness to law enforcement officers' suicide and first responder mental health issues by raising funds for the Blue Help, a nonprofit organization that aids families who lost family members to suicide and help prevent suicide by providing resources to first responders and training of various organizations. And whereas Christopher created a fundraiser known as Penny for Their Thoughts to help collect donations for Blue Help during this trip. And whereas on May 2nd, 2021, Christopher set out on his three-month-long journey with supplies and a custom bicycle included a front wheel that was designed to charge his cell phone and other electronic devices as the wheel spun. And whereas Christopher documented his trip on social media and on August 1st, 2021, returned to Gaston County to a warm welcome of family, friends, law enforcement officers, and many others. He had completed his trip as a schedule to raise more funds than his initial goal. Now, therefore, Christopher Lawrence deserves to be commended for his 28 years of unselfish and dedicated service to render as a law enforcement officer of Gaston County and for his continued commitment to help his fellow law enforcement officers get support that they need through such organization as Blue Help. The witness whereof, to understand, certifies the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on the 18th day of August 2021, submitted by Johnny Torbett, James White, Principal Clerk.